Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Purnell is here. Chris is here. Aki is here. And we have Orion Niemiller joining us. How's everybody doing?
Woo!
Okay.
I'm doing pretty good. I just finished 100%ed Doom the Dark Ages. It was fun.
Oh, how'd that go?
It was great. I think today all I had left to do was beat, like, the very last mission, which was basically a boss fight, and then buy one last gun upgrade to get all the upgrades, and then go through all of the gun challenges, which took me a couple hours from start to finish just to do all of the gun challenges. But I finally 100%ed that game. It was great. I really liked it.
GGs.
Yeah, and now I'm just looking to... at... Oh, go ahead.
I don't know, I just said I wanted to try that game.
You should.
It looks really cool.
Fantastic. And it's on Game Pass. Woo!
Woo!
I like how the mic always cuts when you do that so loud.
Yeah, it's because I have it to cut off anything that gets too high pitch.
Like Jacob when he woos.
Yeah. But now,
Ryan,
I'm just looking
for... how have you been?
Good, man. I've had a, from our personal correspondence, you know, I've had a pretty wild, confusing bunch of days here, but we're good. we're good. I'm excited. I've been playing, we'll talk about it later, but I've been playing so much solitaire for the last week and a half or so. So much of it.
You are resident solitaire correspondent.
Exactly. I'm very excited. Tomorrow I'm going to the AEW shows because they're in my backyard.
Ooh.
So that's gonna be fun. And my buddy Truth Magnum hooked me up with some tickets. I'm gonna go see some buddies and have a good time.
That's cool as fuck. What kind of tickets did you get? Are they like?
I don't know until they actually tell me. I'm name dropping a tiny bit because I know this is one of the few groups of nerds that cares because my wife sure doesn't. when Chris Jericho gets me the tickets, they're usually pretty good, and I haven't had a bad seat for any of these tickets I've gotten. So they're nice.
Like on the production side, or you get like,
yeah, they're usually first level on the production side. So you're not like behind the camera, but you're kind of over that way. Because if people aren't buying those seats casually, usually
those are the ones I want to buy.
Oh yeah, it's usually a good angle, and we can chat a little bit more. But a bunch of my buddies are going to be on the show to come hang out. So it's going to be nice to see some friends and watch some wrestling.
That is badass. Yeah, everybody always wants the TV side. I don't. Like, I don't give a shit about being on camera. I want to see what's happening. When you're on the TV side, you're seeing everybody's back.
Yeah, yeah. The nice thing about where they usually put the comp tickets is that, like, you usually have plenty of space to spread. like, there's no one in front of you. There's a lot of empty seats over there because no one bought them. It's a pretty nice little setup over there.
I had that happen to me at a SmackDown in Wilkes-Barre. I got a ticket on like StubHub or whatever it was, and I got there, ticket scan, no problem, legit ticket, go to my seat, and it's taken. And I get the person in charge, and they're like, oh, well, apparently they cut down on the seating for this section. Do you mind if we move you? I'm like, yeah, whatever, as long as I could, you know, watch the show. And they gave me one of those comp seats that were like first level on the production side, and the view was perfect.
Yeah, those are the seats usually get a good corner. yeah, you get a corner so you see the buckle so you can see the ring a little bit better. It's usually opposite the ramp so you can see all the entrances and stuff. I dig those. See, if you're not going to be first or second row, save your money and go up a level because you're not going to see shit.
I did second to last row on the floor seats, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't love that. I used to be a seat filler in Indianapolis. My buddy had a hookup with, it was Bankers Life Fieldhouse at the time, but anytime that Raw or SmackDown would come through, they always give you, there's like probably about 40 people that they give free floor seats to, because they don't want there to ever look like there's empty seats on the camera side. So if people get up to go to the bathroom, go to the merch stand, whatever, they'll grab a couple of you seat fillers and you go sit in those seats until they come back. I never had to move once. I probably got to go about 10 shows that way. It's hard to see, though. You're kind of, because you're like behind the announce desk and you're kind of like, there's a bunch of, you know, bunch of large bodies in front of you. I say this as one of them, but wrestling fans aren't known for their petiteness often. So, you know, it's a, the sight lines can be a little tricky to see. So I like those first level seats. I'm excited.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds very, very awesome. I think when Adam and Dave Kay went to a show in Baltimore, those are the seats they got because they have a mutual friend who knows Hangman.
Okay.
Yeah, and they got to meet him backstage and chat and hang out and like, you lucky motherfuckers.
Hangman's a good dude. I've met him a couple times. I'm not going to claim I'm buddies with him, but he's a good dude.
I'm buddies with you. That's
my claim to fame. Hey, you know what? That's sad for both of us. I'm not going to lie to you.
Watch Brandon Cutler stream on Twitch. Does that count for anything?
It does, yes.
I miss them streaming. Perna, how was your weekend?
I don't even remember. I guess I did. Oh, I went to TMG. That was fun, I guess. I went there on Saturday and hung out with some friends and saw the lineup, play some board games.
How'd that go? Really, what kind of fun stuff was it? Too many games.
I couldn't tell you because I barely engaged with the event. I showed up, played board games at the, or could demo the guy's game and gave him some feedback, which he must have liked because he took lots of notes, then gave me his business card and was like, "We got to stay in touch, man. You're good."
Nice. What game?
It was some game called like Get Baked that has nothing to do with weed. when I made the reference, he's like, "Since you made the reference, here's these cool stickers we made for people who would make that comment."
Wait a minute, though. Is it about bread?
It's about baking.
Okay, I'm down for that.
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It had a lot of take that to it, which I exploited to high holy hell. But it was a good time. And I also took my friends to play my one friend's board game called Chemical Overload, and then they liked enough to buy it, so I earned my friendship for one more month by getting a sale. played one game of U-Beat, but unfortunately, like with most places that do music games, they had the arcade where all the music games were kind of clustered up in an area where it was really hard to hear your game, so...
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't able to get the best vibe out of it, but I played it and had fun. Then went to a panel called Faster Purple Worm Kill Kill or something. And that was fun, too.
I heard about that one.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a D&D party, and I guess the people that were there were sort of celebrities, though I didn't recognize them. But the people in the audience certainly did. But the idea is that they're all fledgling adventurers on a D&D campaign where they're expected to ultimately get party wiped by the end of it. So, it's fun. So, all in all, that was my TMG, and that ran me from 2:30 to 11 o'clock.
Was it Get Baked, a cookie baking game by Nomnivore?
That's the one.
Nice.
Nice. Well, I mean...
NomnivoreGames.com if you want to check it out. They're taking pre-orders for $40.
I would have bought it at the show probably, but it was caught up in customs, so they didn't have any.
Oh, that sucks.
I agree. I wanted to support them. What were you saying, Chris?
I was just saying if it wasn't like about weed, and you know, I asked if it was about bread because that's like what I was thinking, and you know, I was like, well, maybe that's too obvious of a question, but I was like, well, I guess it could be about pottery or shrinky dinks.
You're my age group, aren't you? I feel like the reason why I thought it was related to the product was because of the old movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. Yeah, man, we're
Shrinky
like,
Dinks. That's a memory.
Yeah. I did get to have Shrinky Dinks as a kid. I wasn't too impressed, but it was pretty cool.
I don't even know what the fuck that is.
You have Google. Look at the fuck up.
You don't need to. That. You don't need to. It is come and gone. It's like Pogs. You don't need to know what they are.
I'm just going to make fun of all of you because you're old instead. How's that sound? I'm not going to Google nothing. Fuck that.
Alf's back in Pog form.
You're going to make fun of me. I'm happy being young when I was young than young now. So fuck it.
Yeah.
You're making me feel bad.
I saw someone condescendingly post online, okay, kiddo. I'm like, how is that a burn? Because they're younger? You're going to die first, bud. They win, man.
Especially with attitude.
Oh, no, you're older.
Yeah, you're going to be killed soon.
Also, a lot of people type that. It implies that it's like saying, you're just confirming that age doesn't always bring wisdom because you're a fucking idiot.
The boomers do have all the healthcare and houses, so maybe they will outlast the younger generation this time.
Maybe.
That's why I always feel a little good about the time I did buy my house, because it was completely irresponsible, and it ended up being the best thing I ever did, despite being irresponsible. I bought it because I got dumped and thought I couldn't buy a house by myself because usually it requires dual income. My friend said, that's not true. I said, you're lying. A month later, I had a house.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to lose an argument.
Pretty much. It was like, I can either take the money I saved up, use it to pay off my student loans, or buy a house and then resume paying them at the normal pace.
Yeah.
And I think I made the right decision.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, unrelated to anything, I've always loved the call to arms of, like, is this the kind of world that we want to leave behind for Keith Richards?
Yes.
I love that I heard that joke 20 years ago and it's still relevant.
It is. Yeah. Still works. Oh, my Lord.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't need to know.
Because you're young. We know.
Yeah, I'm not old. Fuck up, Aki.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's still alive, so they are a present concern, I suppose.
If it wouldn't hurt my hip, I would, I'd be over there right now giving you what for.
I'm a breath.
I wouldn't want you to break a hip.
Oh, I'd throw out my back if I tried tackling someone.
Right.
Chris, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was fine. I played a show. It was my favorite coffee house's 20th anniversary party. And it made me realize that this is like one of the first places I went to in Austin, and it's like what made me decide to move to Austin, because I was like, I'm never going to get anything cooler than this, like, anywhere else in Texas. And to date, I've been right. And that was in 2006, so I didn't realize I was such an early adopter of this place, and that, damn, 2006 was a long time ago. But, yeah, my band played a show there, which is really cool. Apart from that, I snapped up some deals on some old video games, and also finally received my Lunar Remastered on Switch, and I've been playing it on Switch 2. So been enjoying my nice brand new Switch 2 console by playing a port for the previous system of a game that came out in 1990X, early 90s, I know that much. And so, yeah,
1990X, that's the same year that Mega Man X happens. Be careful.
And Earthbound.
Maybe.
Yeah, and Earthbound.
Earthbound's good stuff.
Yeah, apart from that, it was just a long weekend of not doing too much.
Best kind of weekend.
Yeah.
Very good. So, Ryan, what have you been playing lately? What have you been doing?
Sorry, I muted myself. I've mostly just a lot of solitaire, finishing up Disney Dreamlight Valley.
Oh, actually, I was going to say, related to solitaire, is that completely by coincidence, I learned how to play Free Cell over the week. I'd never played it before, and I was actually playing Super Solitaire on the Super Nintendo, because I was like, I never played the solitaire game on Super Nintendo, so I'm going to try it. And yeah, right,
have you ever played that one?
If I've played that one, it's been forever. You keep giving me too many modern ones to review for me to go back and play Super Nintendo versions.
Yeah, I spotted it in a retro store. It was like only $14.99, which, you know, that used to be the price of like a Super Nintendo game. But I was like, you know, I just realized I've been aware that there was a solitaire game on Super Nintendo and never picked it up before. It's pretty solid. It's got a lot of solitaire games on it and different ways to play them. So
solitaire?
Yeah, solitaire. Correct.
Solid.
Brian's audible sigh was worth it.
Minus 5 stars.
Solid beer.
I was waiting for Aki to chime in with, what's solitaire?
No, I was young to know what solitaire is. Many a time.
Like, what's a Super Nintendo?
Yeah. What's DOS?
What's what?
DOS. DOS, which you actually don't DOS. Know what it is.
I think that's the old operating system for Windows, I think.
Oof.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. You don't need to know what it is.
Close. Goddamn no.
Aki will need to know what it is if Aki ever wants to play a little Oregon Trail. I'll tell you that much right now.
Oh, they've been making that one available.
To do with my time. Oof.
Hang on, I think I can play Oregon Trail in my like browser right now.
Oh, you 100% can. I did it a couple years ago.
Oh yeah, you can definitely. You can.
I can't
definitely
remember what
just
the website
it.
Is, but there's like a. It might be like a abandonware.com or something like that that just has a ton of old DOS games that you can play right from a browser.
Yeah.
Hey Ryan, in your honor, our giveaway tonight. We're giving away our very last copy that we have. We've been sitting on it for ages. Solitaire 3D.
Nice! That one, I think I legitimately almost put 1,000 hours into finishing.
Nice.
That's a lot of effort.
Without... Some of that was idle time, but you shouldn't get that close to 1,000 hours on a solitaire game. Idle or not.
OregonTrail.ws, by the way, if anybody wants to officially play it online, because the current owners of the Oregon Trail who made the recent remake have all the games hosted on the website to just play in the browser. So no, you don't need DOS.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So if you want to knock off your family with dysentery, now's the time.
I just
have
found that t-shirt. I still have it.
Trail?
I've looked into it a little bit, but I've not played it personally.
Yeah, that felt like one I shouldn't know beyond the title. Yeah.
Basically zombie version of the Oregon Trail.
Cool.
I remember we covered it on, I think, PS4. It was rated T for teen, and in like the tribute section there were so many F bombs. And I what the how did this pass? Then again,
they're like, we just don't care. We just don't care anymore.
One of the Digital Eclipse games, I can't remember which anthology it was, but they had documentary clips, and it's an E-rated game, and the documentary clips were uncensored. And I'm sitting there like, I'm hearing F-bombs in an E-rated game, and I don't know how it happened.
As long as you're not seeing any nudity.
If you're not seeing any nudity, then it's a sad day.
Yeah. So, anything anyone else want to talk about, or should we just jump into reviews?
Jump! Might as well jump. I mean, I'm first, so I don't care.
Here's what is jump?
Anybody? Anybody? Any thoughts? Any thoughts? Are you doing this?
I'm on drugs.
Drinking's too difficult.
I'm drinking beer. Nope.
Are you getting baked or baking or whatever?
I'm getting very baked.
That was me before the show, and that'll be me after the show. Yay.
Yay.
All right, fuck it. Let's go into reviews. First game to talk about tonight is Irem Collection Volume 3, developed by Tozai Games, published by Inen Games. It released July 1st. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $24.99. Inen is back with Volume 3 of the Irem Collection, delivering a trio of fantastical shoot-em-ups. This time it's Magic Machines and Mayhem, three fantasy horizontal shoot-em-ups from Irem's Arcade Vault, Mr. Heli, Mystic Riders, and Dragon Breed, all in one explosive collection. Chris, what's Irem Collection Volume 3?
Explosive. Yes, so Irem Collection Volume 3 is the, of course, the latest in a ever-growing series of re-releases of their old arcade games and occasionally a console port. So we did see shmups, pretty much all shmups the first time with Volume 1. The second one, we got some run-and-gun, platformy action and stuff. Here in Volume 3... Sorry, we are all back to shmups, but these are going to be a little bit different this time. I can't wait until they get into, like, some of the games that people actually know from Irem, or, you know, I'm just waiting for Ninja Baseball Batman, really, myself, but look, here's what we got. I guess you could say the star of the show, because it's got two separate entries in the collection, is Battle Chopper, also known as Mr. Heli's Great Adventure. And that is Heli like helicopter. So this is basically a shoot 'em up that is scrolling, but not auto-scrolling, except sometimes it is. It plays a little bit more like a free-floating kind of situation, like, I'm trying to remember what that one game is, but I'm never going to remember it in time, so. Yeah. But it's to where you are, like, basically floating around, like helicopters can, you know, like, they can stop, they can go backwards and things like that. Well, in this one, you can't go backwards, but, you know, you can, like, float up and down and all around, and you scroll the screen whenever you feel like it. But, of course, enemies are going to be persistently coming after you, so you are going to want to kind of move at some point. So Mr. Heli has a couple of moves at his disposal. Now, this is going to remind you a little bit of, like, Fantasy Zone, where you have, you know, your left and right scrolling, again, without auto-scrolling, and you pick up money from, like, you know, well, in the case of Fantasy Zone, from enemies, but in this case, you actually bust up rocks, and you find money in the form of crystal jewels that, you know, it'd be like this big giant... like a quartz, like, you know, thing, jewel that'll, like, drop from the ceiling or something once you uncover it from the rocks. And if you catch it, it's worth, like, $100. But if it falls, it shatters into smaller quartz power-ups that are worth, like, 20 each. And then, you know, it might be less than 100 total, or you just have to collect them all, you know, just kind of, like, there's a little bit of a penalty for not catching it in midair, you know? And as you collect these quartzes that are worth money, there are also power-ups that you can uncover, but the power-ups have a price. So, like, you can upgrade your laser, but for $300. So if you haven't been uncovering those quartzes and collecting them, then you gotta move on past that and hope that there's something better around the corner. Because, like I said, you can't actually scroll the screen backwards. You can only go forwards, but at your own pace. Again, the enemies are going to be coming at you persistently. You fire at them with your front, you know, your forward laser. You also have a bomb button that shoots straight up in the air, which again is for busting up rocks. But as you improve that, it can, like, turn into, you know, like a scatter shot kind of deal, or, you know, kind of changes characteristics as you power it up. And then you fight bosses and move on to the next level. Keep doing it. It's an arcade game. What more could you want? It does have a situation where there are certain paths, so you have to pick a path. So that's kind of cool, is that, you know, you may end up playing the game a different way the second time after playing it the first time. And the game does occasionally switch it up to an auto-scroller, like maybe the screen is scrolling up persistently and you have to keep going on that. And then, you know, you have to, like, choose paths that way as well. So there's a lot of cool stuff that that you can kind of do with this one. So I quite liked it. And basically what's included on this collection is the Battle Chopper World arcade version and the Japanese version, Mr. Helly no Daiboken. And then also separately included is the Japan only Mr. Helly's Great Adventure, which is, by the way, that's what Mr. Helly no Daiboken means. But yeah, Mr. Helly's Great Adventure, which is a TurboGrafx-16 / PC Engine release. Again, only in Japan, but the game's fully in English, so you don't really... there's no real reason not to play it. And it's a shmup anyway. Why do you need to read the words? But yeah, it's like, it's basically the same, you know, Turbo 16 PC Engine arcade ports tended to be really accurate, and that's the same deal here. It's like, you know, I started playing it and I was like, yeah, this is the arcade game. I can't tell the difference, besides that it sounds a little different, looks a little different, but, you know, it plays the same. But yeah, all three of those are available to you. That is the, like I said, the kind of central star of the show for this particular collection. The other two games actually take a bit of a fantasy page, you know, a little bit of a genre page to mix in with the shmuppiness, which is great. I always love it when that happens. We have Mystic Riders, which is a kind of an early 90s, I believe, shoot 'em up starring witches. Of course, with the huge amount of cotton re-releases and remasters and new games that we've been seeing on the Switch, we're pretty darn used to seeing witches on broomsticks as a you know, as a thing. But what is it, Keiko's Flying Squadron or something like that? Still haven't seen that one. Yeah, KO Flying Squadron. So we need to see that next, folks, whoever has the rights to that one, to round out our witches on broomsticks as a shmup. That's like $1,000 Sega CD game, by the way. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I know. But I like it. I have it yo-ho-hoed into my flash cart, and I've been enjoying it a lot. So yeah, the Mystic Riders, like I said, it's a one or two player. You know, you just run through stages as witches, and you kind of change your witchy powers depending on power-ups that you pick up throughout the game. It definitely features like these really big, elaborate bosses and lots of cheap deaths. But luckily, in the way these games go, is that you can basically kind of rewind your way to the end as it goes. Or, you know, dump in more quarters. Like, it really, that's kind of the what I did. I just kept dumping quarters into it until I actually did beat this one. And yeah, it's quite fun, quite colorful. You know, you get bonuses if you manage to stay alive till the end of the game. You raise your rank, and you know, depending on how you play it, there's online rankings for that. So but yeah, that one was a pretty cool one. And then I think Mystic Riders actually never came out in the States at all. Like, I think maybe the arcade cabinet did, but a lot of these were, like, I noticed ported to British computers, and I just couldn't tell. I'm like, okay, I guess then they came out in Britain. Like, I don't know. If it didn't get released on Super Nintendo or whatever, then I definitely didn't hear about it until this review. But yeah, it's like I said, it's a little more simple as far as like a shmup goes. Like, it's not even as complicated as a cotton game. But I do really, really like the graphics, and especially the bosses in this one. They're very big and bold and very arcadey. Anyway, the last of the, and certainly not least of the three sets of games, anyway, or whatever, Represented in this collection is Dragon Breed. This is one I have heard of before, because it's one in a somewhat niche but not unpopulated genre of the dragon is a ship in the game. But this one is a little different because the dragon. So you play as a kid, a king actually, but he's 15 years old, so a kid. Who has a magical crossbow that can shoot forever and never needs reloading, which, you know, and throughout the game, he is riding on Bahamut. That's Bahamut with two O's at the end. Bahamut. literally, that's his name. And he is an invincible dragon who is like one of those kind of like dragons that you see in the animes and stuff like that. Like think Dragon Ball Z, like it's a long snake with a dragon head and like really nothing else to speak of. It's just it's like riding a large flying snake with a dragon head. And as you Sivalion's a good kind of example of this as well. But anyways. So, your kid will die if he gets hit once by anything. That is to say, you bump his head on a wall, he gets hit with a bullet, he gets shocked, or, you know, just, like I say, you run into anything with the kid, he die. But the dragon is fully invincible. Not only invincible, but it does persistent damage if you're running into things with it. So, the crossbow is cute, but it doesn't exactly do the job. So a lot of this game is like kind of strategically powering up your dragon, because the dragon has four different, well, as far as I could tell, no, five different modes of like, you know, power-ups that you can pick up that change his elements. So you have like fire, so he's always breathing fire in a persistent arc from his mouth, which is great for, you know, forward offensive. Or the blue lightning, which causes him to always have streaks of lightning coming down from his belly, so you're always like doing damage right below you, you know. And then like the gold one where he's always scattering these like gold shots, like scales essentially, that destroy everything. And then the silver one, which is my favorite, where he shoots homing missiles all the time. I love me some homing missiles. And then his default is the green dragon, so which is nothing special. But anyways, so yeah, it's all about keeping, you know, a little bit Danmaku style, right? Where like the kid is like your weak spot, but everything else can get hit. But instead, it's a dragon that takes up like a third of the screen. So it's just keeping the kid's, you know, fragile little body away from everything that's coming at you. And it is a lot, while strategically blocking it, or even like kind of forming a circle, like a kind of Ouroboros with the dragon to like get full invincibility, which can happen sometimes. And just like moving the kid safely through this onslaught that, you know, doesn't even bother the dragon. So it's a really, really interesting take on it. And I would actually say this is maybe my favorite in the set. I did beat it. And I'll tell you why right now as we talk about the usual quality of life improvements that you get from this collection. Now, of course, all of these are arcade perfect ports, as far as I can tell. Obviously, I haven't played the cabs, so I can't tell you, but all the reports I've heard have always considered these to be, you know, it's exactly the arcade game. Now, you do have, right at the start, you have two different ways to choose how to play it. You can go casual mode, which unlocks all of the quality of life improvements, but you aren't able to do online rankings, right? And then classic mode, which adds in, of course, online rankings, and the one and only thing that it really gives you, besides the ability to change the control and like the video and stuff, is auto fire. I don't know which of these games had auto fire originally, but they all do here, no matter what mode you play. So that's, you know, a thing that you can have, which is great, because I do not like shmups that don't have auto fire. I like very few shmups that don't have auto fire, let's put it that way. So yeah, casual mode, you basically have a full complement of cheats. They are unique to each game.
Unique.
You got like invincibility, infinite lives, infinite time. In the case of Mr. Helly, infinite money, which, you know, we know some folks who are abusing that cheat code nowadays.
Womp womp.
Womp womp. You have like your overall difficulty setting that scales from very easy to hard. You can also mess with your starting lives, things like that. But also, you can just straight up in these games just simply rewind if something happens and you just want to undo it. That's really all you need is just that rewind button, because, you know, what else is going to happen? And I mean, especially in the case of like Dragon Breed, because in Dragon Breed, if the kid gets killed, you start from a checkpoint. You don't just persistently dump quarters into this one, unlike Mystic Riders. See? So yeah, you definitely, I definitely, in order to beat this one, leaned on that rewind button for my first time through. But yeah, you know, obviously with shmups, it's like, it's not about playing through the game and, you know, facing all the challenges, without these things. It's all about replay. It's about getting better at it slowly to where you can like really achieve stuff like kind of on your own, however far you want to take it. Or you can just beat it the one time with the features and not worry about it. You aren't going to lose anything of the game doing it that way. But yeah, all the games have all of those features. They have a glut of you know, visual like enhancements, if you want to call it that. And I've gone over these like really before in the other reviews, so you know, refer to those. But yeah, you have like everything from like, you know, a full screen to 4x3 to 1:1, you know, pixel perfect. You have like actual pixel perfect and actual pixel perfect 1x, which gives you a tiny 1/10 of the screen, but you know, every single pixel is there. Not wow. One has been added or taken away. So it's a kind of a monkey's paw situation of I want perfect, you know, representation of my game. You have some wallpaper options, you have weird color options. You can invert the RGB in like five different ways, more than five different ways, looks like seven different ways, or go black and white, or like I said, the actual true colors of the game. Shaders are the usual set. I've mentioned these before, but I like them. So you got CRT, which, you know, curves the screen a little bit, adds lines. Vengeful CRT, which adds like this kind of cross-stitching look, like, you know, like, I don't know, a vengeful CRT that is out for revenge. Arcade Glow, which makes the whole thing look like it was smeared with Vaseline, which is great. Fun. And then Same Boy LCD, which I guess is a... I don't even quite know what that is. I think it just... It adds like these kind of vertical LCD lines, I guess, as if you were playing this on like a bad LCD screen or something like that. And of course, the best option, which is none. And then, yeah, past that, it's, you know, there's not a whole lot of like different archival or museum style things to this. You don't get any descriptions of the games. They won't tell you anything about those. There's no like, here's the arcade board like art, here's the, you know, instruction manuals or whatever. Like, none of that stuff's included. So these aren't like museum style collections. These are simply really, really you know, functional arcade ports. So there you go.
All right, well, let's talk price on this. It is $24.99 for the three games digital. If you are on Switch or PlayStation, Strictly Limited has physical versions available on pre-order. Basic editions, $34.99 per volume. If you want to get funky, they got a five-pack of volume 1 through 5 for $160. And if you're feeling really insane, you could get the 1 through 5 Collector Edition bundle for $429.99. Chris, is that on your wish list?
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, definitely. No, I actually have not ordered anything from Strictly Limited since they kind of stopped sending me stuff I've already bought. Well, you know, it's one of those things, like, they had a real rough time, apparently, back in 2020. So it's like they're one of the ones that takes a lot longer than, you know, even Limited Run kind of got their stuff together on sending out these collector's editions, but I'm definitely still waiting on stuff from Strictly Limited. I did not personally pre-order any of the IREM collections. Unlike Taito, I'm not like a big IREM fanboy, but I do love the games. I'm just as happy to play them digitally, and I feel like that's the way to go. But, you know, like if you do want the physical, $34.99 is not bad. $4.29.
Digital, your thoughts?
Yeah, 25 digital. It's definitely worth it. That's less than they would be if they all three came out on Arcade Archives, and then you get a home port as well. So, you know, it's a worthwhile bundle. I'm going to say all the games are very fun, great, essential viewing for a shmup player enjoyer such as myself. I had never gotten to play these before, and I feel richer having done so. So I'm going to giving them all a buy it. But yeah, that's, you know, use your own judgment on whether you want to get the collector's edition of these, because obviously you're probably going to have wanted to invest in that earlier to get, you know, volume one and two when they were up as well. So that's just going to be your own plan, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. From one 3-pack to another 3-pack. Next up is a trio of solitaire games: Jewel Match Solitaire Collector's Edition, Jewel Match Twilight Solitaire, and Jewel Match Solitaire Winterscapes, each developed by Circuit Software, published by Ocean Media, released June 17th, 18th, and 19th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $9.99 each. Ryan, how do you want to do this? Do you want to talk about each one individually, or do you just want to handle it as a one solid 3-pack?
Well, we'll kind of do it as a 3-pack, and then I'll, because there are some slight differences with the three, and I'll just kind of mention that as we go, but they're more or less all the same game with just a little bit of different
code. Now, do you want me to read the intros for the games?
Please do.
All right. Jewel Match Solitaire Collector's Edition. Return to the world of Jewel Match. In this beautiful new solitaire adventure, journey across an ancient land to rebuild epic castles of old. Over 320 levels in all, plus many solitaire variants, including Klondike, Spider, Free Cell, Pyramid, and more. Dozens of unique gameplay alternatives. Shake up your classic solitaire with locked and frozen cards, obstacles to remove like vines and wax seals, and power-ups like wild cards, jokers, and shuffles. Jewel Match Solitaire is the ultimate relaxing solitaire game. And then we have Jewel Match Twilight Solitaire. Jewel Match gets spooky in this new solitaire adventure. Discover and rebuild eerie derelict castles, but beware of vampires roaming the land. Over 200 levels in all, plus 50 bonus Mahjong levels to unlock. Dozens of unique gameplay variants. Mix up the classic solitaire, such as locked and frozen cards, obstacles to remove, and power-ups like wild cards, jokers, and shuffles. Grab a deck of cards and get your spine chilled with Jewel Match Twilight Solitaire. And then we have Jewel Match Solitaire Winterscapes. It's cold outside and you're snowed in with a game of solitaire. Travel the icy land and rebuild 5 frosty locations across 200 levels, plus unlock 12 bonus game variants such as Yukon and Emperor. Overcome obstacles like locks and frozen cards, chains, vines, and more to collect the bonus gems and coins in each level, which you can spend in the shop for special upgrades. It turns out solitaire is a dish best served cold. All right, Ryan, do your thing.
Okay, so all three of these games, I'll start with the positive on this. So every level that you're playing is essentially a version of Tri-Peak Solitaire, which is any card on the board. You have your pull pile, and then whatever that is, it can be one card up or one card down from that, and then you can kind of make chains off it that way. Cool level design. I do think that they do enough differences with the boards where you mentioned the, you know, there's the chains, the frozen cards. That does add some strategy and other elements to it, which I kind of enjoyed. It made the levels, you know, it's hard to make 200 levels of a solitaire game all feel like they're, you know, vastly different or you're building to something. That's just not how solitaire works.
Yeah.
But they're all functional. The gameplay of that's really well. These games can be a little tricky on console because you could tell they'd probably be easier with a mouse. It does have a nice feature in there where you can adjust the reticle speed, so it's easier to get around. Because at first I was like, this is going to be a nightmare because it's just slogging, but you can speed that up so you can move around, which is nice. Solitaire is designed for a mouse just in general if you're not playing it in real life. That was all great. The music in all of them is fantastic. I feel it's probably all unlicensed music that they could get. Like, for instance, for Winterscapes, my wife came down when I was playing and it's like, why are you listening to Christmas music? It's all instrumental Christmas music. It's like Amazing Grace and like stuff like that playing. But like, it's a really good orchestration. It feels like really calming and nice to play, to listen to the music while you're playing. So I thought all that was good. All of the games, they have a slight variance on as you're kind of going through the quote-unquote story. You're basically just going through a path to get through the first 200 levels. And as you go at certain points, when you've gotten enough stars, you can get up to 3 stars per level when you perfect it, which is just basically clearing the board. So I believe it's the Twilight one that has the Mahjong bonus levels, which is nice. You're basically just playing... I think there's like 50 or 60 Mahjong levels you can play. That was my favorite of all of them because I just enjoy Mahjong.
And Mahjong's very, always fun.
Yeah, it just functional. Nothing special about it. It's like a Halloween theme, so all the things are like ghosts or bats or cats or whatever. Functions well. It's nice. The other two games, the Jewel Master and the Winterscapes, you're just unlocking other versions of Solitaire. I believe their unique list. I didn't get to go through like each one to match, but it looked like there's different versions of Solitaire that are the bonuses in both ones. Those all function fine. There's achievements for, I think, winning 10 games of those. It can be any game that you want on that. Those are all fine. I enjoy it from like the actual Solitaire gameplay. This is a lot of fun. If you enjoy playing Solitaire games, it's great. Where the biggest issue came in, and Joe, you can attest to this with me sending you messages in the middle of the night, being furious.
Oh, yeah. You were very happy about this.
Yeah, all three games do this. There's no manual save option, and there's no clear indication of what makes the game autosave. I lost... one time I lost 80 levels worth of progress, because it didn't save. And like I said, there's no way, at least that I looked all over the place. There's no manual save, and I never saw a little icon pull up that shows that it's auto-saving. Nothing like that. And that is infuriating. If your whole kind of fun of this game is that, like, you're unlocking different, you can unlock some, like, quote-unquote powers where you can, like, eliminate a couple cards from the board, where you get more cards in your pile that you can use to try to beat the levels. That stuff all goes away because it didn't save anything. Yeah. It happened to me all three games. One time I had to leave. I left one of the games running for well over 24 hours. I just slept with my machine on, which I haven't had to do since the NES days when you when you didn't want to lose your progress in something. So like that for me is that's like an inexcusable thing. Like, for everything else that makes these fun, that totally soured me on this. And if this wasn't something that I was going to be reviewing, I would have not powered through. That's like your time as a gamer and just as a person is precious. And if you can't guarantee me, and I still don't 100% know what is saving the progress, if I can't predict that, I don't want to play your game.
Yeah,
which is unfortunate because I can imagine
the second time it happens in a game, you're like, oh my god, yeah, fuck this, I'm gonna move on to the second game and see how that one is. And it happens again in that game, like, ugh.
Yeah, they're all programmed essentially the same. You know, it's a different coat of paint, different things, and yeah, it was. My son might have learned some interesting new words based off of hearing me when it happened again. But like I said, it's fun for a solitaire game. The actual solitaire is great. It's totally functional. Your mileage is going to vary on that, obviously. some people, if you don't enjoy solitaire, this game's not going to make you do that. You know, there's nothing special enough about it that's going to make you like solitaire if you don't. But they're cozy when you're playing them. I love a good cozy solitaire game, and like when it's not deleting my saves, I felt really cozy playing these games, and they're fun.
Right. Well, let's talk price on them. They are $10 each. Would you buy any of them? Would you buy all of them? Would you buy none of them? Would you wait for a sale? Wait for a fix? What are your thoughts on all of this, on all three?
Until there's some clarity or they figure out what the save problem is, I couldn't recommend anyone buy these. If they fix that, I think $10 is totally worth it. Like, to get up like to 100% it, you're going to put a decent amount of hours into that. I think my hours are skewed because a couple of them I just left running because I was scared to turn them off.
Yeah.
But I would say you're doing at least probably 15 hours. And if you like that, like, that's fun. Like, I think you get your money's worth if it doesn't screw you out of your save. You know, they fix that. I would give it a buy for sure. $10 is not unreasonable. Until then, though, I wouldn't touch it.
All right. Well, Ryan, that is it for you. We want to thank you for coming on. We will let you get going. You can get back to rearranging your wrestling figures.
Yeah, so that my son can't break them.
You have any fun shows coming up? Anything going on with you?
Other than the AEW show, my booking's a little light for the rest of the year. Just that's just kind of what comedy is right now. Yeah. But if you happen to be a little outside of Phoenix, I'm doing a show on the 26th of this month in a city called Sholo, Arizona. It's up in the mountains. Then I'll be in Roanoke, Virginia in August, DC area in September, trying to fill the calendar. We're getting it figured out. Business is slow in the summer. That's just kind of a natural thing anyway. So,
I mean, then again, it's the summer. Do you really want to go outside in the summer?
Oh, dude, not really. But the problem is where I make a lot of good money in the winter is places where it's miserable because people still want to do entertainment, but they don't want to hang out outside. So if you want to see me in Canada, it's probably going to be in January. That's what happened.
Buzzers.
Oh, yeah, man.
The coldest I've ever been was in Syracuse, New York, for a show I did in the middle of February a few years ago. I think it was -40 outside.
That sucks.
Amazing.
But people love comedy in the winter. They still want to go. So, but yeah, cripplethreat.com and cripplethreat8 on all the social media. Shoot me a follow, and I'm always posting about my shows when they come up.
Very good. Ryan, have yourself a wonderful night, and come back soon.
Appreciate it. I'm going to go check if my son's on fire.
Yeah, you should do that.
He's two. It's very unlikely, but it's never a non-zero chance that he's lit himself on fire. That's all I'm saying.
The same with Jacob, really. You know how it is.
Well, I mean, that's true. Because he boofs candles. That's his own fault.
Yeah, he does.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Take care, Ryan. All right, let's move on. Next game is Shuffle Tactics, developed by Club Sandwich, published by the Arcade Crew. Released June 24th on Steam for $14.99. Shuffle Tactics is a roguelike deck-building tactical RPG. Strategize to survive tough battles, pick the right cards to create powerful synergies, and bond with your sidekicks to get an edge in battle. Adventure awaits. Will you rise as Asteria's new king? Purnell, or is it King Purnell?
No, Purnell will do.
Okay.
It's good to show you. So this game takes place in what can best be described as what you may have just said a second ago. It's a roguelike tactical card play roguelike. At the beginning of the game, you will choose a hero character. You start with one, earn more as you go. These heroes have their own innate ability and base stats. But more importantly, in a game like this, they have their own set of unique cards that they have that are exclusive to them as a character. Once you've chosen them, you are placed on the map, and in what has become a common staple in a number of roguelikes these days, you are basically on a map with nodes where you have to choose which direction you want to go. Depending on the direction that you choose to go, that will determine what you will be engaging in going forward, whether it's a shop to make new purchases of various items, which I'll talk about in a bit, or battles. There's not a ton of different events in this game. You're essentially going to be fighting or shopping or forging. Once you get engaged with a combat situation, you will be tasked with what generally ends up being one of three different scenarios. Either A, the end of the level scenario, which is kill the boss. You have to beat a boss. Shocker. One might be defeat all enemies on the map. And the last one will be destroy all corrupted rifts, which will be like these obelisk looking pillars that cause all sorts of douchebag effects on the board. And also have high HP, so got to work to kill them. Your character, again, as mentioned, has a set of cards that are dealt to them at the beginning of each round. Each character has their own number of movement points and also number of attack points. Though, unlike a lot of games where you think attack points is just how much damage you do or whatever, in this case, it is how many action points you can use to spend on your cards. Cards can have a multitude of effects. Unlike a lot of games, this game has a number of cards with a lot of side effects associated with them. So it's very rare that you're going to play a card that just says, do 5 damage or hit this guy hard. It's going to usually be, you know, hit this guy, also bloodlust, innate, and fracture. You're like, okay, that's a lot of keywords. What do they mean? If you are holding on, if you have the card selected, you can use the right thumbstick to kind of scroll between the different effects. Though it will be a little cumbersome, trust me on that, and you'll be able to see what these different effects are.
It has become cumbersome.
Sorry. That was a song. I was like, what? It's okay. I was like, what is he talking about?
I mindlessly launched into that song recently, like this week, so...
It was apropos after all. I was like, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
But that's what I get for listening to shoegaze all the damn time.
This is the shoegaze of its time.
Maybe it was.
No.
Maybe it was. It was.
I'm stupid.
So if you, in the middle of combat, there's all sorts of effects. It's like dealing with high ground, where some cards do more damage from high ground, so you'll be engaged with the elevation of the map. Typical stuff there in regards to that. But if you defeat all the enemies and win the battle, you will obtain a reward. And again, the reward is dependent on the level you choose. Sometimes it will just be money. Other times it will be getting a relic, which, like typical games of this type, the relic will give you various effects, such as one of my favorites that I've come across fairly often, do 2 damage to an enemy whenever you walk past them. Nice way to do chip damage is you're just kind of wasting movement that you didn't need to use on certain enemies, you know. You can get charms, which can be equipped to cards to give them bonus effects. One of my favorites there would be one that makes the card pop up on the top of your deck every round, basically. So it's always available to you when you need it. Good shit. And then one that is kind of cool for this kind of game that I'm not used to. In fact, I would say this is the thing. Well, I guess aside from the whole fusion element of genres, the main thing that makes this unique for the style is that you can also sometimes win a sidekick. See, in this game, you don't get to choose your party members at the start of the game. Instead, you find them as you're playing through a run. If you win the level that has a sidekick as a reward, you'll be given the opportunity to choose between a set of different sidekicks that are available at that particular node. They come with their own exclusive cards that are not available to the hero. And their bonuses and benefits only generally come from times like beating a boss where they let you upgrade your sidekick, which gets them new or enhanced cards and enhanced stats. So you will be engaging with this for the most part until you die or beat the game. At which point your character that you chose as your main will level up. And as you level up this character, you will engage in different new cards that are unlocked for them and eventually unlocking new additional characters. Now, I mentioned earlier about some of the side offense on the map. So there's like a forge, for example, where sometimes they will let you upgrade a card. Other times they will let you fuse 2 cards of one level to get another card of equal, I want to say it's equal or greater level. I can't remember at the freaking time, but basically turn two cards into one potentially better card. I rarely use that except as an excuse to purge my deck. So I don't want to get rid of cards for something that might end up actually being bad. It's not my style. But that is available to you. This game, I will say, I have found myself enjoying the play of it. However, there are some issues I have in regards to the interface that I would like to hope that the developer has plans to work on.
Get into that, I have a question.
Okay.
Most deck building roguelites are fairly fast paced. Battles are usually quick. You could get runs over with quick. Tactical battle games are usually a lot slower paced. How long do runs take in this? Is this like something
I think
you need to set a chunk of time aside, or can you get in and out pretty quick?
I think you should set aside a chunk of time. Though, with that said, the game allows you to put it down pretty much whenever and come back and resume your run. But
that's
cool. As for the run itself, if you're somewhat decent at the game, you're not going to just fold, which means you're going to be fighting a number of battles. So tactical movements all about the place. So slow and steady, not fast and breezy. But so there's like some issues I have regarding this. I'm not sure if it's exclusive to controller support, which this game does have, because there are button mappings laid out on the screen. So it's not like I'm trying to shoehorn it into a Steam Deck here. The camera, I'm not sure what the heck is up with the camera, but I have not figured out how to actually use it, despite the fact that the tutorial actually describes the camera movement as using, like, I want to say it's either the, I don't remember which buttons it is, but it basically says, use these buttons to manipulate the camera. Well, I've tried every button on the Steam Deck, including what you'd expect to be the proper function, the right thumbstick, and I get nothing. In fact, the right thumbstick does nothing at all. So that is something they should update. In fact, they need to update that. Another thing, though, I got a lot better at dealing with it because I feel like I figured out a way to make it work. It's a bit cumbersome to determine what side benefits the opponents have on the map. Like, you can use the right thumbstick over them sometimes to click between them. But I don't know. I feel like it'd be better if you could just click on the opponent with the A button and just scroll through them like you normally would with any game like this.
Did you have any other issues with the Steam Deck? Because I wanted to double check our info, and I looked at the email that we got about this one, and under Steam Deck it says, Shuffle Tactics is fully playable on Steam Deck. The store page says unknown, but, I mean, PR is PR, so, like, is what else do they need to address with the Steam Deck to fix what's broken?
Well, I can tell you that as far as functionality is concerned, like the thing working, I've had no issues with it. There's been no glitches, no weird slowdown, nothing crazy like that. So in that regard, I feel as though it runs perfectly fine on this machine. It's just
the camera,
mainly the camera problems and engaging with the interface and whatnot. Because once I get past that, I think the game is perfectly fine. Some people might get a little frustrated in regards to, like, the different having to constantly. Oh, wait, there was another thing too. It was like maybe it's just me, but, and it might be just I need to explain it in the rules better. But also, it just feels a little cumbersome. Scrolling and looking at the actual charms. So when you look at a card and you want to see what benefits or effects it has, you can, like I say, use the right thumbstick to scroll through the keywords and see what's there. However, if you have a charm on that card, the thumbstick clicking doesn't apply to that. So on Steam Deck, I've had to actually touch the charm on the card with my finger just to see what it does, which seems kind of wadongoed, you know? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense considering the whole point is to use my buttons. So that's a thing. But so it'd be nice if I could look at the effects of my charms on a card. Okay. Without having to drag them. I also wouldn't mind being able to just use the controller to move the charms to my cards instead of having to drag them. Because again, it just seems like a weird thing to be like, okay, take myself away from the buttons just to drag this thing over, whereas everything else is using the buttons on the controller. With that said, though, I do feel as though the game itself is fun. Like, I don't dislike it. I've enjoyed my time with it when I'm not fighting those weird control things. Oh, Jesus Christ, put a rewind feature in this thing, too. Oh, my God. So, when you move your character around, let's say, for example, you started flipping through your cards, but you didn't cancel the flip through your cards. The game will still allow you to, say, move your cursor around to see what your movement range is, but it doesn't trigger unless you, you know, cancel the card view and actually go back to the movement grid. But the reason why I encountered that issue so many times is because I am constantly trying to get a better feel for, like, how much distance my cards can cover if I want to attack with them. Or, you know, just making sure I got the right placement on an attack before I use it, because sometimes the cursor seems like it's underneath the enemy, but it's actually not. And if by any means I make a mistake on either moving my guy to a place I didn't want him to go or using the attack in a direction I meant to not do it in, there's no undo button. And I feel like there should at least be the undo action for even if one, if it's one action. I'm not saying redo the entire set of moves to give me the complete edge over screwing up. I'm saying just let me redo one move. The correct bad button presses. That can't be a big ask. But yeah, aside from that, and those things, I do think this game is fun. I do think it's worth trying out. And yes, is where you come in.
All right. Well, it is $14.99 right now. If people are on the fence, it does have a demo on the Steam page. $15. Give me your verdict.
I think it's a solid try. It would have been a bite if those other issues weren't there. That's for sure, though. So keep that in mind.
All right. Next up, Excalibur, developed by VanPixel Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released June 25th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $6.99. Take to the Skies is a team of cute pilots and fight for peace in vertical scrolling bullet hell style. Chris, what's Excalibur?
Okay, so, more shmups. this is just one, though.
Shmup week.
But yeah, exactly. So yeah, this is an interesting one where it is a it's a vertically scrolling shooter, and you choose from, well, for one, you choose like a story mode or arcade mode. So the cool thing about story mode is that you actually have infinite lives and a little more health, which you don't die instantly when you get blowed up. So, you know, but it does take, you know, it's it does like reduce your health, and so you can take like a couple of hits. And then they have the arcade mode, which I guess just gives you the limited lives and, you know, less health, but, you know, it's just kind of rocking through the game in the way that you would in an arcade cab. The real thing about it is you choose from these three girls, Caliburn, Galatine, and Arundite. So
I just want to point out the store page says you could choose from a team of three unique pilots.
Unique.
Each with unique shot types and melee weapons.
Well, you know, that's, for one, not true. I mean, it depends on how you construct that sentence, because they do each have a different long range weapon. That is the main difference between them, really. And by the way, there are other pilots that are unlockable. So there's three silhouettes that I see here. One of them looks like an animal, and I can't tell what the other two are, but I guess they get unlocked through the storyline. But anyways, yeah, their long range weapons are unique unto themselves. However, the short range weapon is just always a sword, and that actually does factor into the gameplay quite a lot. So but yeah, so you got Caliburn, who is your they describe her as a linear, which means that all her shots are just straight ahead, right? That's the usual default shot type in a vertically scrolling shmup. Then you've got Galatine. She's got the glasses, so she's smart. She has what's called burst, which means that, you know, when she shoots, there's a little delay between, like, you know, like I said, bursts of like shots and such. And, you know, a little more powerful though than linear. And then you've got Arendite, who is, you know, she's the pluckiest and also only 18. So, no, whatever. It's like 18, 19, and 21. It's like, whoa, 21. Old person alert.
Aki, are they hot?
Yeah. I guess. Her weapon is shotgun. And that's, this is one of the more difficult to grasp, not grasp, but, you know, like kind of difficult to work with, I guess, grasp conceptually, that she has a very short range, long range weapon, but it spreads out and it's pretty powerful. But yeah, it's really, it's not going to go outside the screen at all. It is in fact going to basically be just like a shotgun blast, but only like 5 feet ahead of her. So definitely made the least progress with old Arendite. But, yeah, when you jump in to the game, you know, your characters have, like, a little dialogue, kind of Powerpuff Girl style, and then you split up and your character, you know, gets through the stage. Now, the stages are laid out like any vertical shmup would be. You got lots of bullets coming at you. Not quite. I would say this does just cross over the border into, like, bullet hell, because it does, things do shoot a lot at you, but it's not quite on the level of a cave shooter or anything like that. Or, you know, like, I've already used the word Danmaku today, so I can't use it again. So I won't say, but anyways, you go through and you, not only shoot them down, you also pick up power-ups, and the power-ups actually don't power you up right there. What it is it's currency, so that when you defeat the boss, you can then power up your character for the rest of the run. It's a level-up system, but it does not persist between games. So if you're playing through story mode, you still have to, like, continuously continue. You can't just replay a level and keep improving your character or anything like that. You know, there's no grinding. You just have to, you know, get, when you start the game over, you start the game over. So you just kind of have to figure out what build you kind of want. You get to choose between, like, your HP, your weapon's level, which actually does change the characteristics of the weapon a little bit more. Like, the burst shot that Galatine has, for instance, now actually does burst. Like, it's a short burst of shots, but also in that burst, they do a little spread of their own. And so you kind of get, oh, okay, I kind of get how this character is a little bit more now. So, you really kind of get the feel of how these girls are different once you actually have beaten a few levels and actually improved their stuff. There's no screen clearing bombs as far as I can tell. Instead, what you get is a charged melee attack. So what I mean by that is that you can use your sword and hold a direction down to sail into that direction by a certain amount of distance instantly, rather than having to fly your ship around, which is very useful in the first level. In fact, I would say necessary to learn, because the screen obstacles, that is to say not enemies, but things in the screen you can run into, necessitate having to move from one place to another quickly. And so you have to kind of learn how to use the melee shot, not only to defeat certain enemies, because sometimes your shot is just not taking them down fast enough for them to scroll out of the screen, or get that last shot in on you, but the, because the melee weapon's way more powerful, but also it just is the only way you're going to get to a certain part of the screen where you need to be, in order to get past. And so, and that's going to factor into everything from, like, because your melee attack dash can cut through bullets, but not solid objects. I learned that the hard way. And like, you may end up going through the solid object, but it'll take most of your health with it. So, you know, that's the kind of trade-off you can expect there. So yeah, it's all about kind of learning how that melee dash attack works in conjunction with your character's unique long range weapon. But no, they all speaking have the exact same.
The description also says you could challenge player rankings and leaderboards for each of four unique play modes: story, arcade, whoa, boss rush, and time rush. Also,
I've never heard of a boss rush or a time rush. Anyway, go ahead.
The store page, I'm looking, they have screenshots of some of the other characters you can unlock. There's an octopus, a UFO, and a kitty cat with a helmet.
I thought I recognized a kitty cat with a helmet from the silhouette, so I'm looking forward to unlocking them. Like I said, I have not before, because I was just going to say, this game kind of hard. it does get to where, you know, of course, like I said, you can boost up your weapons and your health and your speed even, so that you can, like, move, but the levels, like, go up in difficulty to match, so there's not really, like, a time when this game is, like, super easy or anything, and it really is like one of those things where it's like, damn, wish this ship moved a little faster. Like, I'm doing my best here. The bosses are really clever, though. I really like the first boss. It's a Hydra, so when you defeat one head, two heads pop out, then three heads, and so it goes in phases like that until you're fighting a six-headed Hydra, but it's also really cool. Ship. Yeah. So there's nothing like, this game is clever and well made. It's just, like I said, it's difficult, and it does not have continue from where you died. It has checkpoints, which is, as I mentioned in my last review, a much harder type of game to get through. Although, you know, one might say it's a little fairer to the game that you can't just dump quarters until you win. But then again, you can't dump quarters in until you win. So if that's one thing you'll have to know about this game before you get into it as a shmup enjoyer.
Yeah. Well, let's talk price on this one. It is $6.99. I know on Xbox and Switch right now, it is on sale for a whopping $5.59. You can save 20%. The 16th for Switch and the 10th for Xbox? No, 8th, something like that. I don't know, whatever. You can get it for $6 now, but normal price is $7. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that is paltry change for what is basically a complete game that's, you know, new and really trying, really out there trying. So it's a good challenge. Like I said, it's not impossible to play or anything, so don't think you're going to trap yourself into an unplayable game. I'm just saying it's not especially breezy. You do have to pay attention at all times.
Yeah.
I think it's real fun. I think it's worth the cash.
Sounds good. Next up, Rusty Rangers, developed by Fantastica, published by Games Harbor and Fantastica. Released June 21st, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Rusty Rangers is an action platformer and roguelike with elements of Metroidvania. That's a lot of genres.
Whoa.
Choose your ranger and explore procedurally generated dungeons. Will you be able to defeat all the bosses? Purnell, what is Rusty Rangers?
Well,
oh my god, we hit use of unique number 500.
Woo!
Oh, we did it!
That's a fairly unique accomplishment right there.
So unique.
Worthy of praise.
Indeed.
Rusty Rangers.
I want to take this opportunity to thank every sales page for these games and also other reviewers for giving us the inspiration to keep going and abuse this one word in perpetuity.
Forever and ever.
Time for, amen.
Wait till we get to 1,000.
Whoa.
Like,
I'll have a speech ready.
All right, Rusty Rangers, what's going on here?
So, to be honest with you, narrative-wise, I'm not even 100% sure. My take on it is that you are dealing with raging against a capitalist society. That's the vibe I got from it. And I'm perfectly cool with that, to be perfectly honest with you. The scope of this is you basically diving deep into a series of labyrinthine roguelike dungeons to defeat an evil mastermind while also helping a professor in the process of doing so. You might be asking yourself, but Purnell, you should be very well familiar with the heck the plot of this game is. Why aren't you more familiar? I don't give a shit. It's a roguelike. And it wasn't grabbing me, to be perfectly honest with you, so it just kind of went out the door beyond the must-crush capitalism. So, what that entails, though, is that you are one of the Rusty Rangers. You are an individual who is tasked with going in these dungeons, and there are a multitude of them that you have to unlock them as you play through the game. They each have their own basic default gunshot. They have a basic loadout of
health to armor tile ratio, armor being the thing that can absorb damage instead of your health, though once you lose the armor, it's gone until you get more armor tiles. And they all have their own unique sub-weapon to start out. So as you play the game, you'll find additional newer alternative sub-weapons as you play as well. Sub-weapons, as if you were playing Castlevania, requires you to use energy to use them, and each sub-weapon requires its own bit of energy to play. And as you enter dungeons, you will be going from room to room, battling out against a multitude of monsters, enemies, and such. And every once in a while, you'll come across a room event, such as a shop or a guy who wants you to kill all the enemies in the screen in exchange for good loot, or the professor, or other such things. A lot of the rooms, and I mean a lot of the rooms, and each dungeon has a teleporter as well to let you get back, go between the rooms as needed to, you know, backtrack or whatever, which honestly, at first, it kind of annoyed me. It's like, geez, they're supposed to be special. And now they're just kind of there. But then eventually I was like, it all saves me time, so I really don't give a crap. Put it in every room, which they kind of do, because I just want to get around as necessary to save myself some time. So that's what that's all about. Treasure chests exist within the dungeons as well. Treasure chests require a key to access and open the treasure chest. I'm not sure if this is an accurate depiction or not, but treasure chests I've seen come in gold, silver, and bronze, and I believe the color of the chest indicates the quality of the treasure that's inside. That is pure speculation because I have not tested it with hundreds of chest openings to confirm it. I've tested it with like 30. So at the end of every section, you have to fight a boss. The bosses, from what I could tell, seem to be the same bosses. So a lot of roguelikes, like say Rogue Legacy, would have you run through the same sections, but at the end there was like maybe a choice of like five bosses you could fight. I don't think that's the case in this game. And if it is the case, then I'm just really unlucky. Okay, then. Once you beat them, you'll get a cool bonus relic, though you can also get relics as you play through dungeons sometimes too. And then you'll get to move on to the next area. Similar to Enter the Gungeon, you can occasionally come across a character that will let you fix an elevator so you can go directly to another zone instead of having to, you know, go through the entire set of dungeons to get to the one you left off on when you died. If you die, however, you respawn back at the Hunter's Base. That's your hub world, where you can engage in a few little side ditties, like some side quest that characters there want you to have, or, you know, upgrade that will make your future runs better, such as going to visit Anubis and purchasing, you know, new relic gear or items that can potentially appear in subsequent runs after you've purchased them. There are locations you can upgrade that will allow you to have better, I don't know, I guess like perks as you run, such as like faster reload speeds, which seems kind of weird because you don't really reload your gun, but I guess that just means rapid fire. And like item draw distances and things like that. You'll spend a special currency to do that, and it's basically done by upgrading furniture that exists within your lair. And then it got a bunch of other things too that exist there. It gives you an excuse to run around and talk to people and engage in events prior to picking up another character and then running through this all over again. The vibe with this game that I have is an odd one in that the game is fine, but there's nothing about that made me really go, ooh, shoot, this game is a lot of fun. It's more like it's another roguelike platformer, which, well, let me phrase that. Roguelike platformer, Metroidvania, which it's not. God damn it. It interconnected rooms is not a Metroidvania.
It's elements of Metroidvania. It doesn't claim it is a Metroid.
They didn't even need that. they didn't even need that. I get it. It draws eyes, but they didn't need that. But the game itself is fine. I mean, it hits the notes that I've become more than familiar with over the years with playing these kinds of games. And I like those notes. So I'm not going to suddenly dislike this game. It's perfectly fine. With that said, though, if you're looking for like the hottest new jazz, this is not it. If you're looking for the new Coke, then maybe, because the new Coke didn't last forever. It was just fun for while we drank it. And that's what this game could technically be, too. It's a good time while you're playing it, but it's not going to rewrite history or make you really dance a merry jig for something, you know, fruity and cool. It's just, this is a fun roguelike action platformer.
$15, verdict.
Try it. Don't get rusty. But right. Get rusty.
Sounds good. Next up, Bullets and Brains, developed by Aajvar Studio. Ew. Published by No Gravity Games. Released June 26th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. In Bullets and Brains, you'll find yourself immersed in a sprawling post-apocalyptic environment, teeming with engaging atmosphere and danger at every turn. As one of the last survivors, it's up to you to navigate through the desolate streets, abandoned buildings, grimy alleyways, but also forests, sewers, and even snowy mountains, fighting off waves of relentless zombies. Our friend Andy Sperry couldn't join us for this one, so we recorded something and sent it to us. So, Andy, take it away.
Bullets and Brains is a single-player or co-op zombie shooting and looting experience. If you're a fan of twin-stick shooters like I am, then you might want to go check this one out. It kind of has that survivors-like feel to it, too. The endless wave meets random roguelite progression. As with all zombie-themed games, Bullets and Brains takes place in a post-apocalyptic world. One of these days, I'm sure we'll get zombies in a pre-apocalyptic world or space. Maybe zombies back in time. Ooh, somebody make a zombie game where you travel through time. That's a free idea. Anyway, in Bullets and Brains, you'll play as one of nine unlockable characters, each with their own stats and starting weapon. Character stats are speed, vitality, and stamina, and weapons range from your classic weapon types of assault rifle, SMG, shotgun, to a flamethrower and a saw blade-equipped disc launcher. You're not restricted to these in level, but your character always starts with their unique loadout. Each character can be chosen before level starts, and there's some fun customizable headgear options for them. They're just hats and don't do anything. But I unlocked a mascot-style bear head and have been rocking that ever since. As one of these characters, it's up to you to push back the zombie invasion. There's a slight story involved and dialogue between levels, but nothing out of the ordinary. The classic, "There's zombies here. We need to push them back. Clear the supply chain. So-and-so is stuck. We gotta send in a team." Nothing to write home about, but it's there to create some sense of urgency or a reason why you're out there fighting in the first place. There's a basic feel to the gameplay that makes this one easy to pick up and play by yourself or with a friend. Walk around, shoot zombies, which will drop brains. Collect enough brains to get a random boon, destroy everything, and get out of there. You have a dash to avoid getting trapped and a special move that refills when collecting blue points on the map. This special move slows time and creates a blowback effect, helping to get you out of tough situations. Some levels open up with a survival mode where you fight as long as you can or have to survive multiple waves on a timer. It's got some nice switch-ups and feels less repetitive this way. For a game like this, avoiding repetition is hard to do, but I would say with any of these survivor-like games, the fun is in the random progression. Levels unlock as the game progresses and new areas open up. Each one has very similar challenges, just masked behind a different scene. You'll fight in the sewers or in the woods, city streets, on a train. There's some variety in the visuals, and new zombies show up to try to eat you. The challenges are usually the same, though. Find three research vials, get a big score, complete the level without dying, those kind of things. If you complete them, you'll gain some experience points, money, maybe even an upgrade or two. Back at the base camp, you can drop off those vials you collected to earn more money, buy silly hats or upgrades, level up with the points, and train new weapons. You can also purchase new boons that will change up the random gameplay. Think of the boons as what you'd find in a Vampire Survivor setting. Enough brains leads to things like more health, shockwave damage on hit, spike attack during reload, more stamina, or even drone that goes pew pew. These help you survive longer in the level. Over at the training center, you'll pick a weapon, and the game sets you up in a quick target training course where you'll race to the finish while blasting pop-up targets. A gold, silver, or bronze medal will reward points, but damn is it hard getting a gold medal. I think the difficulty needs to be dialed back on that just a hair if I'm being completely honest. With level points, you can grab permanent upgrades that carry over to all characters and include stamina boosts, improved crit chance, vitality, pickup range, and speed. It's a little difficult to level up in the game, but you can always come back to previous levels and play again. Bullets and Brains has a fun 3D style to it, and I didn't experience any game-ending glitches or situations. It felt well-designed and put together nicely. I really like when games feel complete out of the box, and this one definitely has that feeling. Overall, a pretty fun game and an enjoyable experience for the price tag. I still need to try out multiplayer, but if you're into twin stick shooters with the roguelite feel, then why not give this one a shot? And for those of you out there listening, remember, listen to more heavy metal and eat more wet pancakes. Love you, SML.
Moving on, next game is Drug Dealer Simulator, developed by Movie Games, published by Ultimate Games, released June 20th on PS5 for $24.99. Have you ever considered creating your own crime empire without the legal and moral consequences? Simulate it. Crawl into the dark alley of the drug dealing business and make your fortune. Our friend Horacolite wrote in a review for this one, and I'm going to read it. The president has released a new law that segregated immigrants into various ghetto neighborhoods in America, putting up walls and police checkpoints to keep the peace. A man named Eddie, who works for the cartel, has been sent to one such district to help build a distribution network to flood the streets with the cartel's drugs. Drug Dealer Simulator is a first-person sim game that puts you in the role of a dealer who works directly under Eddie. In the beginning, you'll buy drugs from Eddie and then sell those drugs to prospective clients. Once sold, you'll give Eddie his cut for the cartel, who in turn give it you access to larger purchase orders. You start out with a small apartment as your home base, which contains a laptop providing access to ShadyCom, a site used to accept drug orders and interact with various other quest-giving NPCs and vendors. The game starts out with a pretty repetitive game loop: buy drugs, bring drugs back to apartment, accept orders from clients, sort drugs into proper sizes for orders, deliver drugs, collect the cash, bring cash to Eddie, rinse, repeat. When delivering drugs, you have to be somewhat cautious as police are constantly patrolling the areas and will stop to search you. If they do find drugs on your person, everything is confiscated, so you may want to run back to your safe house, which will shelter you from the police but will temporarily list you as a fugitive, meaning police will automatically chase you on sight. Choosing to sell drugs during the day increases the police awareness of your activities, which could lead to the potential raids on your properties later on. There's a curfew set in place at night, so police will stop anyone they see during this time, but dealing at night lowers police awareness of your operations and give you increased experience and cash for your completed deliveries. Start, you'll only be able to sell weed and speed, yay, but as you level up from deliveries, you'll gain access to more drugs like cocaine and crystal meth. Hooray! Leveling up also gives you stat points to distribute between various attributes like stamina to help you run longer from the cops, or stealth to help you remain hidden from the police at night and have a lower chance of being stopped during the day. There's only one area to sell in at the beginning of the game, but the more transactions you complete, the more reputation you will gain, which helps unlock additional areas to sell in. As more areas are unlocked, there will be new properties available to purchase that will act as hideouts, as well give you stat boosts to dealing in those respective areas. Increasing your reputation, standing with your customer base will allow you to convert some of them into dealers, which you interact with in more or less the same manner as customers, except their orders are in larger quantities. You need to be vigilant. Reputation in each area slowly decreases over time. If you ignore customers in a specific area for too long, you could lose them permanently, hurting your reputation, which can also take a hit if people start overdosing on your product. You do have the option to cut your drugs with other substances like flour or ibuprofen, which can lower the potency of the drugs, making it less likely to overdose while also saving you some money. Be wary though, if people aren't happy with the quality of your products, they'll seek their drugs elsewhere. Eventually, you'll get the chance to grow and produce your own drugs, allowing you to mess around with the formulas to find the perfect balance of potency and quality. Isn't too much of a campaign in Drug Dealer Simulator. Most of the game is spent focusing on expanding your own operations and the continuous grind of making sure everything is running smoothly. Those coming into this expecting an experience akin to Grand Theft Auto will be very disappointed, as there isn't much of an action focus aside from evading the police. Partway through the game, some players may hit a wall, quite literally. There's a giant wall restricting access to a portion of the city you can expand your operations into. The wall has police checkpoints guarding it, making transportation of drugs between the zones more difficult, especially during the night when you want to be doing most of your transactions. Going back and forth between the walled zones at night may only serve to increase the tedium of the game for some players. That being said, there is some fun to be had here if you enjoy the game's particular brand of management and fetch quest focused gameplay. I'd give it a try it rating with a recommendation to wait for a sale. Just be aware of the type of experience you're getting into, or learn to deal with it. Really, no one has a comment on that pun. know him?
I was drinking Orange Twist. I'm sorry.
When it deserves one, I'll let you know.
That's fair.
Damn. Well, Aki's just blunt. That's what happens when you're too young for, you know. you see?
All right. We got one final game to talk about tonight and are getting naughty. George, take it away.
SML After Dark.
That's why Aki's here.
Yep. Lootline, developed and published by Candy Light Studio, released June 13th on Steam for $12.99. Set sail on the high seas, choice-driven story where your decisions shape the journey. As a daring pirate captain, you'll navigate treacherous waters, form alliances, and uncover hidden treasures. But beware, danger lurks at every corner, and only the bravest will survive. Aki, that doesn't sound at all like a porn game. What's going on here?
Oh. In this, you play as a young man. I believe the starting name is Thomas. And, you're a drunken shitheel. One of the first things you do is have sex with a prostitute and then refuse to pay her because you're a dick. Fair. You're a pirate. It is what it is, I guess. And, yeah, you immediately, go and free... someone who's being sold into slavery because she has nice tits, the following morning after you wake up very, very drunkenly, and you two go and get on your ship and you start sailing. Woo! She's your new navigator. Yay!
That doesn't sound like a porn game. Load the Steam page. That's a wiener! Okay, yeah, it's a porn game.
Yeah. Sadly, this game doesn't have a lot of options for it. Most of the options that you make don't really affect much of anything, realistically speaking, which is quite a shame. It mostly just affects, do you have sex with this person here, or that person here, or that person here? That's what it really comes down to. This company also made the Lost City games, which I really liked, and it was a little more filled out on what could happen with those games, which is why this is sadly, because I know what they can do. However, the ladies in this are very attractive. You end up with a crew of, I think, like 6 or 7 women by the end. They range from humans to elves. You yourself aren't a human, even, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, you're trying to work your way through this area. It's, you know, the world has basically been drowned out by giant floods. So it's more or less a post-apocalypse style game. But no one fully remembers the past. So it's a very weird mashup of genres. Yes, you're a pirate and everything is kind of... you know, ye olden days with cannons and flintlocks and shit. But then there's also fantasy elves that live in a forest. And, oh yeah, they're still normal boats that run on, like, future tech. Because this is a post-apocalypse. It is a very interesting universe that they've created here. So I'm really looking forward to if they continue it. Hopefully they'll have more impactful choices in the next game. But I really enjoy just the universe they've built here. It's much more interesting than their prior games where it's like it's normal world. This is just a civilization that's out here hidden from public and are, you know, way in the past. Like a post-apocalypse water world style game. Hell yes. And then you turn it into pirates? Yes, even more. That's so awesome. You end up with, you know, as I said, an elf. Almost everyone else, I think, is humans. And a Indrani, I think is what they're called. Basically a demon, more or less. They each end up taking a spot on your crew, and you just go around and help people and fuck up a lot of other shit while you can. So, yeah.
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 For you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Hey, y'all have your words, I have yeah. Leave me be.
$13, need a verdict.
I think it's definitely worth it. I think it's a pretty good game. It's not as good as like Lost City 1, which I think was their best one so far. But it's still a pretty good game. And I think if you enjoy their games, this is going to be right in line with that. You're still going to enjoy it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. We are finished with this episode. We made it through. Thanks to you three for being here the whole time. Big thanks to Ryan Niemiller for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting solitaire with us. For those who might question Ryan's solitaire qualifications,
he's played too much of it.
He has a 1,000 out of 1,000 in solitaire 3D with time played 37 days, 18 hours,
nice. 38
minutes.
As I said, he's played entirely too much. That is unhealthy.
He meditates with that shit, basically.
He has 1850 out of 1850 on Microsoft Solitaire Collection on PC.
Hmm.
There you go.
Jesus.
And the three solitaire games he reviewed tonight, he has 1,000, 1,000, and 960 out of 1,000.
As in the games he reviewed tonight, he's gotten those scores.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, how?
Because he loves solitaire. Are they just
achievements that are easy to get?
No. No. They are not easy to get.
Good Lord.
He loves solitaire. He, like, just looking at his gamer score, Microsoft Solitaire, Jewel Match Solitaire, Disney Dreamlight, of course. Jewel Match Solitaire, Diamonds, or Dreamland Solitaire. Let's see, Dreamland Solitaire, another one. Scroll down a little more. Here's a Prominence Poker. That's a good one. World of Solitaire. There's another one.
That's a lot of solitaire. I haven't touched a solitaire game since Windows.
15 in one solitaire.
And I'm assuming these are all these solitaire games have the exact same rules, just with different skins, right?
Now, some of them have different game selections and different rule sets, different achievements, of course. But
I'm surprised he's not in like any like tabletop card games, because that seems like that would be right up his alley.
I don't know. It's 36-10 out of 36-10 on Forza Horizon 4. Damn. That's impressive.
I don't know enough about Forza to know what the achievements are like for that game. But at this point in my life, I feel like getting a max score on any game is amazing.
Indeed. Well, since we're talking about solitaire and solo stuff, we're going to play Not Alone in the World from Wild Arms by our friend Dale North and Patrick Jacks. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Buck oranges
works with me.